You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave in the wake of a Packers 26-10 victory over the hated Chicago Bears. Dave, a lot to talk about in this one.
Sure.
Aaron Rodgers, over 300 yards in passing, over a 100 passer rating. He passes 56 times, sets a franchise record with 39 completions. Three receivers, over 10 receptions. And I think the biggest question, though, lingering is, what do you think of those white uniforms?
Yes. Is that an NFL rule that on Thursday night games they have to wear that uniform color? But, you know, the solid color, whatever you choose to play in? Someone said that was an NFL thing.
Well, yeah, I think it's a Nike thing. It's part of their deal with Nike. I think it's called Color Rush. And I don't know if it's the home team or both teams or what it is, but they have to go with the solid Nike uniform design on that day. It's part of their partnership with Nike. That's the way I understand it, at least. And I think if the Packers were on the road, I mean, those white uniforms on the road would be great. But at home, it's 2 weeks in a row without the classic uniform, and it's not good, Dave. It's not good.
No, it was funny because it was black and white, so you had the white hat and the black hat, and it made me think of Westworld, where you can choose to be the good guy or the bad guy, and clearly we cheer for the good guys. That just confirmed it for me.
Well, you know, that's an insult to the Bears, Dave, because, you know, it's navy blue. It's not black.
Looks black.
They're navy blue and orange, the same color as the University of Illinois.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with my dress pants, too. What I think is navy blue, it looks black to me. So I have that problem in other areas of my life. But.
Okay. Yeah, you used to like me when I, you know, oftentimes it's early in the morning, get dressed in the dark. I wind up at work with a navy blue jacket and, you know, like gray pants. It's just not a good look.
No. You know? Well, you know, this is the problem, and this is way off topic. But if I wear like a dark navy blue suit and I wear black shoes, to me it's the same color. And some people will tell me that that's ridiculous. You cannot wear black shoes with a navy blue suit.
I do all the time. What do you mean? That's crazy.
I'm told not. You got to wear brown shoes. So
I've heard that brown shoes were a fashion faux pas.
Oh, well, now I don't know what to think. I probably.
Well, but you live in St. Louis, though. That's cosmopolitan city. I mean, you guys are at the leading edge of fashion in St. Louis.
Yeah, we're ahead of the trend. Yeah, that's
exactly
right. So the Packers uniform, I thought, looked fairly ridiculous. have they gone with the all yellow uniform? I'm trying to think if they've gone that. It feels like that's familiar.
It's gold, Dave. It's not yellow. Oh my God. Jeez. Oh, man, we should just erase this whole thing and start again. This is a disaster.
Oh, I'm so glad you're my color coach.
I don't think they've gone with the gold. I assumed when it was Color Rush that they would come out in the gold uniform. I thought green would have looked great. I mean, solid, that if forest green, I thought that would have looked really imposing.
Well,
instead they come out in white.
Except you couldn't locate your receivers downfield wearing green. They'd match the grass.
That's a problem. Good point. Yeah. But the thing is, don't they know that after Labor Day, you don't wear, you know, white pants? And I mean, this is just wrong.
That's true. And they didn't throw for that far down the field. That it's not like they would blend in the grass 20 yards down the field because they threw everything within 5 yards. Which, getting back to the game.
Yeah. Oh, they played the game on Thursday night. Sure, that's right. I remember now.
Getting back to the game, you talked about all the passes, short passes. And, Chris, I think we is generous. I have been talking about this forever, that they should be doing short passes. It's what the defense is giving you. And I felt like this game confirmed what we already knew. Is that and the camera pulled back and showed great shots of how nobody is open. I think it's pretty clear during a lot of those plays, especially in the first half, when they would run down the field and do those isolation routes. You know, everyone's doing their own thing, kind of spread out on the field. They run, and they do not have receivers that can outrun the corners that play a man-to-man. Or at least, I don't know if they always are right on the line of scrimmage. It seems like they mostly are. But they can't outmaneuver their men. They have a lot of possession-type receivers. Julio Jones and Randy Moss is not on this team. And with Jordy Nelson being hurt, he's become more of a possession guy too. So if you have them do individual routes down the field, they're not open, they pan it back, and I can see why Rodgers holds on to the ball when they show that as many times as they did. So they finally, in the second half, what did they do? They went to short passes to Ty Montgomery, and I tell you, if that's what the defense gives you, you do it again and again and again and again. And I heard in the broadcast, they said, well, you know what's going to happen? Our defenses are going to adjust, and they're going to pay attention to Ty Montgomery, and they're going to pay attention to Randall Cobb coming out of the backfield, catching these short throws. And I thought, great, because if they do that, then the other stuff will come back into play. So I thought, finally, 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 they played the offense, not only with what the defense gives you, but with the team that Ted Thompson has built for them. That is the offense that they need to run. And I think it took the bad first half, and I actually think it took the fumble from Aaron Rodgers to finally have somebody say, enough is enough. We have to try something different. And from that point on, after that fumble for a touchdown, looking at the drive chart here, and I'll let you talk for a second. They went 13 plays, touchdown, 8 plays, touchdown, 13 plays, touchdown, 6 plays, missed field goal. But, I mean, it was after that fumble, it felt like something clicked either in Rodgers or on the offense. What do you think about all that?
Well, I want to ask you a question first. I want you to talk a little bit longer. Do you think that what they did on Thursday against the Bears is sustainable going forward?
Great question, because they played a bad offense. I don't know defensively how bad the Bears are. I assume they're pretty bad.
They were without their top three defensive backs, just like we were.
Yeah, okay. Well, and I will admit that I didn't read a whole lot up to this game. I was on the road. I was actually in Chicago. I watched the game in
More
Chicago.
Excuses. Great excuses. Well, fantastic.
If I had said nothing, you wouldn't have known probably the difference. But I watched in Chicago. You should see how into the game Chicago people are. Oh, they were into the Cubs. I'm sorry. It wasn't the Bears. It was a hard time. I had to watch it on my phone because there was no Bear game on TV anywhere I could find. It was all Cubs, which now they're in the World Series. Well. But and it's a big story. But the Bears, I didn't read much about it, but I felt like, you know, the offense moved against the Bears, and they might have a bad defense, but even with their bad defense, we couldn't move the ball in the first half. So the question is, if we've figured something out that we do well, that Rodgers makes good decisions, he can read the defense, but then do short passes. You know, Chris, I actually think it's possible that this could be sustainable, and then it'll come down to how good our defense is to keep us in games. Because, I mean, if you are one-sided, I think it's not great. But like when JerMichael Finley got hurt in 2010, it made them concentrate on what they did. And if you remember that year, they didn't have much of a run game either, and it wasn't until James Starks came on. And remember, we called him Neo because he was kind of good. You know, he gave us a little bit, but he was never great. And Nile Davis, or can someone give us just a semblance of a run game and then be really good at the passing game, the short passing game, or whatever the defense is giving? I actually think that we could get 26 points a game or more. I mean, we could have gotten more, certainly, if we made our field goals, extra points. We could have got at least 30. I actually think this is our best shot, given the way this team is built, for us to score points.
The last statement is about the only thing I agree with in that entire rambling discourse that you just laid out there, Dave. So let me begin to deconstruct your ridiculousness. First off, I don't think the first half was as bad as you said and so many people have said. And I say this because I actually watched this game twice. I watched it, you know, on the night of the game, and then I happened to watch it again today. My son was gone at a wedding, so he came back and we watched the game together again. And I thought, you know, had Randall Cobb been able to secure the first ball in the end zone, I think that would have looked a lot different. And then the second one, if he gets his foot down like an NFL receiver should, you got two touchdowns right there, and the whole narrative shifts for that entire first half if they put up the points that they should. They moved the ball well. I mean, they had 150 yards passing, 160 yards in that half. I thought that they actually did pretty well in that first half. They had a lot of first downs. They had 12 first downs in the half. I mean, it was a good showing. They just didn't finish the deal because Randall Cobb was a little off his game. Now, as far as it being sustainable, I don't think so. This is something you can do against a Chicago Bears team that is, what's the right word? In transition, perhaps? I think, and also their coach is in transition. Yet John Fox looks like half the man he used to be. I guess with that heart problem he had, the doctor's orders were to shave off a few pounds. And look, dude looks good. Probably have a lot more time to exercise when he gets fired in the off season. But anyway, that aside, against the Bears, you can do this. They were a very, wounded animal coming into this game. Then on offense, there was no threat at all once their second string quarterback goes down with the broken arm. And they bring in, Matt Barkley, who was a fine quarterback at USC, but he's not a very good professional quarterback. And so without the threat of any kind of offense, the Packers were able to control the ball against a defense that was down guys. I don't think they're going to be able to do that, say, against Atlanta coming up next week on the road. I don't see it happening. I think teams will not only adjust. I don't think the Packers have enough, talent to be able to run that, because they have too many guys who are, as you mentioned, possession type receivers. And I think you have to have more of a vertical threat. They've got a couple of guys who can run, but those guys at this point aren't very good. I mean, Jeff Janis, has got deficiencies as a wide receiver. He's a fine special teams player. And I think probably at this point, the same thing with Davis. I think Davis runs fast, but I don't think he really knows what he's doing out there. So, yeah, you've got a couple guys that can stretch the field, but they're not really threats because they're not especially good. It was nice. I'm glad they won. I'm glad Rodgers got his yardage over 300 to get that monkey off his back. I'm glad he had another 100-plus passing game. I was glad to see them, trying some combination-type routes as opposed to just the isolation routes. It was great to see all the catches from Devontae Adams, coming close to tying Don Hutson's all-time team record, one catch short. I mean, there was a lot of things that made it nice. The all-time series against the Bears, the Packers are now just one game down. I thought I'd never see them come back from where they were, 20, 25 years ago when they were all kinds of games behind the Bears. But in the all-time series, it's as close as it can get right now. So that's good. I mean, there's a lot of things to feel good about this game. But going forward, I'm not sure that in the NFL you can win this way without having a reasonable running threat to keep the other defense on its toes. I'm all for the passing. Since we started this podcast, I've always kind of, when people said, oh, they got to run the ball, they got to stick with the run, I think that's crap. In the NFL today, I think you have to run just enough to take the heat off the passing game. I mean, that's why you run the ball in the NFL, is so that you can pass it more. And that's my take. This isn't college football. In the NFL, it's a different kind of deal. And I love all the passing, but you have to have more of a running threat. Otherwise, teams will figure this thing out. They'll start jamming on the line because you don't have legitimate downfield threats. There's only so much you can do with moving guys around. It seemed to me, Dave, that Mike McCarthy kind of emptied the chamber here. He tried pretty much everything he could try with 4 and 5 receiver sets and guys in the backfield and doing different kinds of things. That was great. But now that you've done that and that's on film, I'm not sure you can come back to that again and again. So I'm very skeptical about what the future holds, although I will say, It was sure nice to beat your rival by 16 points.
Yeah. A couple things I want to say from that. First of all, you talked about the evenness of the series. Did you see that given all the years the Packers and the Bears played together, Did I see the stat right that they scored the exact same amount of points up to the
Yes.
beginning of the game? Is that
Well,
possible?
I think it was after the Packers' first score, I think it was tied. And now what the Packers would have like a 13-point advantage. They're one game down, but 13 points up. And they've played 191 times, 192 times now. That is insane. I
Yeah,
mean,
it's yeah. That's
yeah.
I wrote it down. Is 3,247 points they have each scored against each other since they started playing. And I don't know. Yeah, somewhere before the game or after, as you say, maybe the score. And now maybe it's a there's somewhat of a spread. But that is ridiculous to think about that they have that same amount of points. That seems so random to me.
Well, you know, it makes me wonder if all this talk about the Vikings rivalry maybe is overblown when you have a series that's been 75 years in the making and it's pretty much dead even. I
Yeah.
mean, that defines rivalry right there.
Well, but it's yeah, the issue is that they've been good, we've been good, and so off, seasons
Yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
decades that we would just kind of trade off, and now it's been
Exactly,
all
yeah.
us. I
For
mean,
a
it
long
does,
time, yeah.
and it looks like the Bears are going to take a long time to get back to excellence. That what they need is a new quarterback, and maybe by losing the rest of their games, they can get somebody good. I seriously, that's what a Bear fan told me. So the only good thing about this is that we'll get a high draft pick and hopefully finally get a quarterback, and be done with Cutler. I mean, it's kind of a shame to watch him over on the sidelines there and think, man, they banked this franchise on that jerk, and there he sits again injured. Also, it was kind of heartening to see Josh sitting on the sidelines too, thinking, of all the things that have gone wrong this season, it certainly feels like not signing Josh Sitton was one that's been a big mistake. I don't know what you thought when you saw that.
I thought he had a tremendous beard. That's what
Yeah,
I
good beard, good beard.
outstanding beard.
Well, and are you saying, and then in terms of not being heartened by how the offense played, are you saying that Rodgers isn't going to play well? Or I mean, because I feel like in today's NFL, it is all about passing. If he gets hot and starts to play well, he might be able to manage this offense as well as a Drew Brees or Tom Brady or anyone that he's played in the past. He just hasn't played that way in the last 14, 15 games. But in this game, I thought he wasn't perfect. He wasn't the accurate Aaron Rodgers that we've seen at times. But I think he is potentially a guy that if you had to pass 55 to 60 times a game, that he could hurt you. So, I mean, are you saying that you're just not heartened by it because you don't think Rodgers is playing well? You just don't like it that you need that balance? Because, one, sure, I'd love to have balance. I'd love to have Eddie Lacy in there healthy and in shape and ripping off 5 yards of carry and make yourself diverse. If you think that we need to run Niall Davis 20 times a game in order to be successful, I disagree with that.
Oh, I do. No, I'm not saying that at all. I am one of those guys that thinks they ran the ball too much, and I know that's contrary to what a lot of people have been said. Oh, you've got Eddie Lacy, you should run the ball 25 times. No, you've got Aaron Rodgers, and it's a passing league. I think you have to run the ball enough that it keeps the defense honest, and you can pass it. I'm all for a 60-40, pass v run ratio. I personally think that they've part of their problem was they forced the ball too much to Lacy instead of passing it more. The problem now is that you don't have a threat at running back. You've got Niall Davis, who I haven't seen a lot of him. I understand he's a good returner, but from scrimmage, his numbers do not look like he's much of a threat.
No, he didn't look that good. I mean, when the two carries that he had too, you see something, a cut, a spin, a break tackle or something. It looked like he just ran into the pile and fell.
Yeah,
You
I
think,
mean,
what is, he's not going to give you a whole lot.
I didn't think so. And then you've got Ty Montgomery. He's a bigger receiver. He's 216 pounds. I like him better back there than Randall Cobb, but I don't like, well, I really don't like Cobb in the backfield, but I'm not crazy about Montgomery. There's a reason why running backs have short careers in the NFL. It's because they're getting pummeled all the time. And I really don't want to see that career being shortened for Montgomery. I mean, he looked good. He had 60 yards. He had a 30-yard run. He had another run, I think, that was maybe 10 yards. Yeah, but that's going to he's not built for that kind of pounding. If the occasional, if he's getting 3 or 4 carries a game because he's in the backfield, that's okay. But, they ran him 9 times, and that's going to catch up to him as well. You have to have, if James Starks was around, he's not a great running back. Well, he never was, probably, but especially now, he's not great. But he's enough of a threat that you have to respect that possibility in the backfield. And my problem is not that they threw the ball 56 times or dropped back 59 times, whatever that exact dropback number was. It's not that at all. I like the passing. I like the short passing in particular. My view is going forward. Is it sustainable? And I'm not really sure that it is if you don't have somebody that's, more than just a mannequin kind of in the backfield. That is not going to allow defensive coordinators to have a doubt in their mind in terms of how they're going to defense the receivers and what they're going to have their front seven doing. They just don't really have that a legitimate running threat. Not that I think they should be running the ball 25 times. I'm happy if they run the ball 17 times. That's perfectly fine. Pass the ball 40 times. That's great. 45 times. That's fine too. But you got to have somebody that is a threat, and they just don't really, at this point anyway, they don't have anybody that opposing defense is going to respect.
Yeah, the one thing I will agree with you is I don't love Ty Montgomery or Randall Cobb running the ball because it's not that they can't, because I thought they both, in this game at least, did decent. Their averages, Ty was 6.7 a
Yeah,
carry
nice.
and Cobb was 4.2. But
Yeah.
you're right. The thing is, it's that the body will take the abuse, which I don't like. But the thing that I sort of noticed is that I didn't think Montgomery or Cobb knows how to be tackled as a running back very well. I thought there were a couple of tackles that they took that were they run sort of like receivers, and then they don't go down like I think a running back is used to. Or I felt there's a couple times how Montgomery landed on his back and his head,
Yeah.
landed solid on the
Right.
ground.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like Cobb sort of gets twisted up a lot, where running backs sort of know when to stay up and when to go down. I mean, Lacy was so big and chunky. I mean, he a lot of times he just didn't go down. But he would take
Yeah.
his abuse as
Right.
well. I feel like when you're a receiver, you can sort of run around and juke around a bit. And if you get hit, it's safeties and corners who are tackling you. And it's not going to be as abusive as linemen coming up and smushing you. So I do think, I think their best chance to move the ball around is to have those guys play running back, but have them go out in passes and very, very few runs. I actually think in this NFL, the only time you really need a run game is when you're trying to close out the clock. Because
Yeah,
when
right.
early on, when the game's in question, I mean, just pass, pass, pass. And I would hate when Starks comes back, or let's say Nell Davis becomes decent. If you're going to do a play or two to those guys, I feel like those are wasted downs almost. And
Yep.
I think our best play is put Ty Montgomery in the backfield and have him go out and maybe don't hand it off to him very often, maybe once in a while as a draw play or something, but basically have him go out as a receiver. And I thought in this game, finally, there are a couple of third and twos where they would just dump it off to Ty Montgomery, and he had a linebacker or someone on him and couldn't keep up with him. And he would get the 3 yards for a first down, or there's one near the end zone at near one of the last drives where they just dumped it off and he was able to break a few tackles and turn it into a 15-yard reception. That I think is their best play. And then, the fact that these corners are sticking to the receivers so close, I thought they did a lot of, the back shoulder stuff with worked pretty well to Devontae Adams. And I don't
Adams had a great touchdown catch. That one in the end zone where he went over the defensive back and made that play was just magic, I
That was
thought.
very, very good. I also think the stop, the stutter step and go should work, and I think the Packers need to be on the refs for grabbing those guys, because I feel like they're so tight to receivers that if they would go for fakes and then go down the field, that's eventually going to work if they can get free of all the grabbing that's going on. I thought they called a bunch near the end against the Bears, which is good. But I think that's going to be a play that's going to work at some point, because they got their backs to the ball and they're so close that some faking and kind of give and goes will work. But anyway, I guess that's a long. I don't love the way this offense has been put together now, but I think their best bet to move the ball is having Ty Montgomery, Randall Cobb be in the backfield and just pass, pass, pass. I actually think until I see it not working, I want to see how teams do figure this out. I mean, what will be the blueprint? Is it what you do is you rush Rodgers? I actually don't think that would work. I don't think you'd
No,
blitz him.
no.
I think with all those receivers, I think that would actually be great.
The ball comes out of his hands too fast now with those five or four receiver sets. He gets rid of it quickly, which is, I think, one of the advantages. I mean, he has so many options. Those guys are just going out and bang, the ball is gone. That's one of the good things about this style of offense.
You know, or do you play more, less linebackers, more safeties? Is that what you do? Or because one thing I thought that was good is when Cobb or Montgomery would go out for those short passes, a linebacker stayed up. I would notice that near the end of the game, and I thought, you know, in games past, that linebacker played deep and was, you know, cutting off a lane. So I don't know. I think right now the way the way you play the Packers is a certain way. This is the answer to that. And I feel frustrated. I've listened to some podcasts talking about dinking and dunking down the field. Like that's a that's dishonorable, or you know, it's not as good. You'd rather, you know,
I'm
throw.
with you there. There's no disgrace in moving the football.
No,
No disgrace.
getting first downs, ball control, you know, keeping your defense off the field. Dinking and dunking is sometimes better. How many times in 11 did we win, but the defense, you know, the time of possession was with the other team because we'd score so fast and our
Right.
defense would be tired. I think dinking and dunking, whoever says that in a negative way, I think should be slapped in the face. Because
I agree.
I
I agree with
think
that.
I'm watching games, I was watching the red zone a bit while I was working. Team after team, especially, you know, I saw New England score a touchdown, which was a short pass on the 20-yard line, and James White ran into the end zone. I mean, a dinking and dunking is kind of what you should be doing. Until you something opens up deep, and I feel like we always do the reverse of that.
I'm totally with you on that. I guess you wouldn't know this because I'm not sure how old you were at this time, but there was an offense called the Aerial Circus, and it was at UW Stevens Point in the 1970s. They had a coach named Monty Charles, and this was his innovation. He brought in was this exact offense that we saw the Packers run, where you have all these receivers, you work from the shotgun, and you pass the ball. You occasionally would mix in a run, just keep the defense honest. But they would, I mean, routinely throw 60 passes in a game, and they won a lot. I mean, he transformed what was a traditionally losing team to one that was competitive. I don't know that they won a lot of conference championships, but boy, they set a lot of Division III passing records for yardage and attempts and all that kind of stuff. And that really transformed the program at UW Stevens Point. So this can work. The problem is, coaches have 40 years now that they've been able to look at that kind of offense, kind of a spread offense, and how you defeat that. What a lot of teams try to do is try to make a team one-dimensional. So if you can stuff the run and force the team to pass all the time, the defense has the advantage. Well, the Packers have voluntarily kind of taken the run off the table in lots of ways because they don't really have a legitimate running back, at least at this point. And so when you voluntarily become one-dimensional, I think it becomes easier for defenses to shut you down. Not that you're not going to get your yardage, not that you're not going to control the ball for a while. But the other thing you have to remember too is when you have these long ball control drives, and I think they had five drives over 10 plays. You can check that, but I think that's what it was. And that's great to watch, but the more plays you have, the more the chances of negative plays happening, a fumble, an interception, a penalty that's going to derail a drive. Ball control is great if you're not going to make mistakes along the way. And so when you're going down the field 6 yards, 7 yards at a time, that's great. The clock runs, you get first downs, and I believe the Packers had 32 first downs in this game. I mean, that's incredible the way they move the ball that way. But you got to be pretty clean, otherwise you're going to derail yourself. You're going to move the ball 40 yards, and you're going to get a penalty or some other kind of funky play, and then you're going to wind up punting the ball without any points. So it's nice to have the quick score threat, and the way Jordy Nelson is right now, they don't have a lot of that threat on their side. So their personnel is good for a possession game, and the three guys who led them in receiving, Adams, Cobb, and Montgomery, are terrific possession receivers. The problem is they have, five or six guys like that, and the guys they have that can go downfield just aren't that good.
Well, they don't trust them. That's right. You know, Janice, they don't trust. And I actually thought I saw a couple of plays where it seemed like someone made a mistake there. There's two receivers in the same spot, and then one is Janice. And so I'm starting to maybe see what the problem is there. And the other is Davis, who they don't trust either. You would think, though, if they ever get a second and one, you throw Janice or Davis out there and let them do, just run down the field and see if you can throw one under. Because, yeah, I'd love it to see them getting 10 to 25 chunks at a time like they used to do, but they can't anymore. I mean, that would be nice to have. You have fewer turnovers. It's just too hard to do. They weren't, Dallas, where they try to throw over the top to Cobb, who's short and, not that fast. He's not a guy that you're going to throw over the top. And Nelson just, it doesn't appear to be the same. I do think what's pretty incredible is you had 39 receptions by the Packers and only one by Jordy Nelson.
Yeah.
One less than Jeff Janis.
Yeah, it was for a first down, though. I'll give Nelson that much. But it's possible, too, that their game plan was to take him away.
Sure. And then brilliant. If they take him away, then you take what the defense gives you. I applaud the Packers to say, take Nelson, he's a decoy, and we're just going to feed Adams, Cobb, and Montgomery over and over. You do that until next week someone says, listen, we got to take out Ty Montgomery. Then, hey, Jordy Nelson just catches eight balls. That's how a team should play. You play to your strengths, but you also play to the other team's weaknesses as well. Maybe that's what happened.
You said that Jordy Nelson is going to catch an eight ball? Is that some kind of a drug reference that you're going with there, the eight ball? I mean,
did I say eight
I don't.
Ball? A deep
you
ball.
Did.
I said.
Oh,
deep
okay.
Ball.
I think you said. I think you meant eight balls, not catching an eight ball.
Oh yeah.
He was going to have some kind of yeah. Okay, good. Yes. I just wanted to clarify that they have one drug-addled player as it is. We don't really need to have anybody else on the team.
No, or at least to be accused falsely by us as being a
exactly
right.
Exactly. Now there is one thing I saw. One interesting stat that I saw. The Packers had, I think they're calling it kind of a triple-double on the Bears, which I guess hasn't happened. It's happened four times in their history against Chicago, where they had twice as many points, they had twice as many first downs, and twice as many yards. And that's only happened four times in the history of the rivalry, where they've had more than double the points, more than double the first downs, and more than double the yardage. So that kind of tells you the totality of the victory. That's why I think even though it seemed a little disjointed, I thought the win was pretty decisive for the Packers.
Yeah, and as much as we talk about what happened on offense, what was going on Chicago's defense or offense was pretty pathetic. I mean, their backup quarterback broke his arm.
Yeah.
So you're down to Matt Barkley. Their running backs are guys, boy, I have never heard of. And our rushing defense did pretty well against that. I mean, they had a couple of guys on as wide receivers that are decent. And I guess, Brian Hoyer had thrown for, I guess, three consecutive 300-yard games.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It wasn't like, their offense was as pathetic as they showed against us. And, I was thinking, too, we were pretty disappointed with the Packers' play, even though they beat the Lions and even though they beat the Giants. I was watching the games today. Giants won again. Lions have won three in a row. I don't know who it is that we feel are great, great teams anymore. Philly beat Minnesota now today.
I didn't see that. No, really?
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
Minnesota lost. I guess, listen, you just got to stay healthy, figure out what you're great at, get, hot at the end of the at the season. As
stay healthy? That's a good one, Dave.
Well,
as they put Sam Shields and Eddie Lacy on IR.
Get healthy. Well, if they can stay healthy from where they are right now, I guess Don Jackson is no longer part of the equation, or
broke his hand. Yeah,
he hurt himself. If they have today, if they can stay healthy, lose no one else, I guess that's probably asking too much. But I guess my point is, I don't know if the Packers are completely out of it as much as I thought they were last week after Dallas game. This they got to build on this. They got to figure out their identity and just get really, really good at what they've currently figured out. And you know what? They might be able to get Joe Callahan back because I'm looking at a headline here that said the Saints just waived him.
Hey, practice squad Packers. All right.
Maybe we can improve there. Hey, should we take a break?
That's such a good rhythm. I hate to, but if you're saying we have to, Dave, I do whatever you say all the time.
All right. Yeah.
So we're gonna take a break. I don't think we're quite done yet dissecting this Packers 26-10 victory over the hated Bear at Lambeau Field. Chris and Dave are gonna be back with more Packers therapy right after this. Packers therapy and back with more Chris and Dave. Before we talk about the defense, there's a couple things I want to cover on defense, Dave. I want to ask you something that I've heard mentioned and written about in the wake of the Packers win, and that was about the wisdom of playing Eddie Lacy against Dallas. Specifically, people saying that, you know, maybe they should have not played him and he wouldn't have re-injured himself. And, you know, he would still be available to them had they given him last week off. So that's, you know, what the retrospective narrative is. What do you think about that? Was it a mistake to play Lacy, or should they have, you know, given him the week off and brought him back instead against Chicago?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. I think there is a desperation with the Packers that happened last week. Dallas coming to town, offense isn't working. You know, he was having a decent year. I think that, you know, playing him, if the trainer said that he could play, I might have started him playing. But I think as that game went on, I felt they abused him too much as the game went forward. I thought just from what I was seeing on TV, there was a point where I would have just taken him out. But I think the game was close. I think McCarthy, Rodgers, they're all feeling the kind of pressure. And I think they leaned on him too much. So, yeah, I think they didn't. I felt like they've always thrown him out there and let him get kind of pounded on, almost as if they know he's got a short shelf life anyway. So, I don't know if starting him was an egregious thing, as people are talking about. But I thought playing him as long as they did, after he clearly was limping around, I think that was a bit much. And I think that just kind of shows the desperation of where they're at right now.
Well, I guess I'm not in the camp that it was a mistake to play him against Dallas. They've always been the quote high side of caution team. They've been very careful with their players. I mean, a good example is, you know, Sam Shields with his concussion. You know, they had him sitting out last year for a month, and this year it's been a month, and then they put him on IR. They were very careful with JerMichael Finley and Sean Richardson. I mean, ever since Ted Thompson's come to town, certainly, but even I think when Ron Wolf was around and Mike Sherman, they've been very careful with their players. And so I don't think they would have allowed Eddie Lacy to play if they believed that there was a chance that he would do more serious damage to his ankle or his foot. Now, I also don't think that they believed that Eddie Lacy was going to be, you know, hurdling his 245-pound body the way he was against Dallas. I mean, the guy ran extremely hard, and I think I can remember four times where he was, you know, vaulting people and jumping over them and showing remarkable athleticism for a guy his size, but also for a guy who had a injured wheel. So I don't know. I'm not blaming Lacy for the injury, but certainly playing the way he did probably didn't help that situation get better. Now, it makes management look bad, but I would imagine they didn't anticipate him to do that. As I was kind of surprised. Now, maybe you remember this differently, Dave, but that usually wasn't a part of his game where he'd jump over guys. And he did that routinely against Dallas, which showed tremendous desire but that just didn't seem like the kind of thing he normally does.
Yeah, you know, he normally spins, and so maybe because of the ankle he couldn't spin, he went to something else, which was jumping. So maybe he was – it's not showing that he was even better shape. Maybe he was compensating for other moves he might have made, because you're right, that was unusual. But I think – I remember him kind of taking himself out of games, limping to the sideline.
Yeah, he did that a couple of times. Two or three times, and so are you saying that you're surprised that when he was taking himself out, that it was irresponsible perhaps to put him back in, given how he was limping around?
Yeah, you know, because I think at that point they didn't have a game plan like they did against the Bears of, all right, here's what we're going to do. We have no running back, so this is how we're going to play it. I think they felt – I mean, the game was – relatively close, you know, until the third quarter, that, you know, we need to keep him in there and play this out, you know. But if they ask him and Lacy says, I'm fine, it's probably hard to do that when you're trying to win so bad. So I suppose I get it. Now in hindsight, I think once he started taking himself out, somewhere in the third quarter, I might have said, let's let him sit and go with something else. Because I can't recall if he played all the way into the fourth quarter late when it was already kind of decided. I know they've done that to him where they've kept him in at times where I felt like, take him out. So I'm not as strong against management here, the management's decision to play him, but I think at some point I might have been more careful given he's the only guy we have. Once the game was out of – I mean, there's a point where it was mathematically out of question, but I think there was a – the theme of the game, you could tell that we just don't have it against this game. I think somewhere in the third quarter, I might have taken him out.
With both Lacy and Shields on IR at this point, I think they have to be out 8 weeks. Once you're on injured reserve, you can bring somebody back, but just one guy. Now, maybe it's too soon to say. Maybe it's going to depend on what they need at that time. But what do you think? I mean, which one of those guys – they're both core players – you know, who do you think they're going to wind up bringing back?
Well, who they do and who I want them to, or hope is healthy, are maybe, you know, one is who it will be will depend, I suppose, on the recovery. I want Shields to come back of the two. I think that they can figure out this offense without having Lacy run, even though I'm such a huge Lacy fan. You know, the one thing with Lacy playing the backfield is he may block on the passing game, but he doesn't give you much of a threat in the passing game. And I feel like they need that running back to be a threat. So I think I could live without Lacy. I think Shields is going to be needed. And against Atlanta is where we're really going to see it. I think they are a good passing team. You know, for a while there, I see already Atlanta's winning 20-0 in the second quarter.
Wow.
I thought they had a couple of games where they just blew teams up in the passing
game. Yeah.
Julio Jones, is he going to go against – Demaryius Gunter? Is that what the matchup's going to be? This could be
a disaster. It depends if Randall or Rollins are ready to come back and play. But I don't know that it matters too much. I'm not a big fan of Matty Ice. He's never been a guy who I thought was that good. I think people like him more because he has a cool nickname. But anyway, Julio Jones is the real deal. And I'm not sure it's going to matter who the Packers put on him. The guy that's going to get his – you know, dozen catches for 170 yards. I think he's that good, and I'm not sure that they have an answer for him.
No, I think it's – you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
You can contain him, yeah.
And you might – your best bet is to go after Ryan on blitzes than, you know, play all these guys in coverage. I don't know.
You know,
I think they're going to get a lot of yards, and
it's
a matter of whether we score to keep with them.
That's, you know, it's a good point you talked about going at him on blitzes and things, and it made me think of Nick Perry, who's played so well this season. Is it time maybe to make him the next guy you're going to sign? Because every game that goes by, every sack, every pressure he gets, I think that his price tag is going up. And with Julius Peppers probably playing his last season, you're going to need somebody of that caliber. Now, the guy's been hurt a lot, but would you be moving at this point to lock him up before he goes on the market?
Yeah, I think I would. I don't know his age, and when, you know, guys seem to decline, He's been hurt a lot, so it's not like his body's gone through all the NFL seasons that he's been in the NFL. But yeah, he's a very strong guy. And you wonder, are there some guys that, as they get drafted, they mature into good players? And, you know, now he's actually in his prime more than when he's drafted. So you'd hate for him to go someplace else and
Yeah, he's only
excel for.
26. He's 26. He'll be 27 by the time the next season starts.
Yeah, I guess you know, they need a guy opposite Clay Matthews. I hate to tie up a ton of money in the defense when I feel like next year they're going to need to go out and get draft or somehow get a receiver that can change this offense a little bit, or get a running back that's a little bit a different dimension than Lacy. But yeah, I would see, you know, maybe you give up a Lang to sign a Nick Perry. I feel like the Langs, the guards, are replaceable more than outside linebackers. Perry by himself, his work, his body of work this year, absolutely, I would sign him. So I guess it depend on what kind of a guy do you think he is. Is he just playing well for the contract and he'll step back as contracts, you know, get extended? Or is he a hardworking guy early at practice, you know, first guy on, last guy off the field kind of guy? Then I think, is he a leader? You know, all those intangibles I'd want to know too. But based on his body of work this year, yeah, I'd like to re-sign him.
Yeah, I'd like to think that he has been able to get over the injuries that plagued him coming out of USC. And if that's the case, he has been disruptive against both the run and the pass. And so I guess I would kind of like to see them sign him with the idea that you're getting rid of the Julius Peppers contract and you're going to need somebody that can play that position. You know, let's face it, the guy's only going to be 27. He's still at the prime, or he will be at the prime of his career coming in. It's a lot of money to tie up, but you are losing a little bit of money with it without Peppers. The other guy who I thought looked pretty good yesterday, and I think all season long he's been quietly good, is Kenny Clark. You know, he's those interior guys in the 3-4 don't get a lot of love. But I saw him moving laterally down the line and making plays, and also made one play in the backfield too. You know, he's young; he's 21, I think, he's rookie. But I'm thinking that this was a good pick. And as he gets older, more physically mature, it's hard to believe him saying that about a guy his size, but he is still a growing young man. He's looking like a pretty good draft pick to me, and I was encouraged by what I saw from Clark.
I thought he benefited a little bit of they pointed him out on the broadcast, and then he made a tackle for a loss right after that. And I thought, I remember seeing it, I was watching on my phone, like, oh, you know, Kenny Clark, yeah, he might be having a pretty decent season. I don't recall thinking about him very often, but that was a good play. And I just sort of like I had good feelings toward him. But I'm looking at his stats. He had two tackles, two solo, one for loss, as opposed to, where's Mike Daniels? Well, Mike Daniels had two tackles, one solo. So as I suppose as good as Mike Daniels is playing, his numbers don't reflect that. So you might be right. He might be a guy that's going to be pretty solid. You certainly see an improvement in the run defense from years past. So he's part of that.
You know, I'm thinking, I wonder if the improvement in the run defense, Dave, has anything to do with those inside
Well, that
linebackers.
too. Yeah.
I mean, those guys, you know, Martinez and Ryan, young guys, one second-year player, one first-year player, they seem to move laterally very well. They're around a lot of these plays. They plug the middle against the run, and they can chase to the sidelines. I'm liking what I'm seeing from those two guys, and I was skeptical coming into the season.
Yeah, I think they both work together. I saw someone wrote an article, and I think it included video along with their article, showed how Mike Daniels can take up two blockers, which clears the lane for the linebackers, not only to shoot through, but just to see the running back and kind of be able to navigate and be able to take the right angle. Whereas, you know, if you've got a guard coming at you have limited angles and can get cut across, you know, so if you've got a free lane, then you can hit the running back. So we're seeing good tackles from Blake Martinez. I guess this game is maybe not as easy to analyze because no one had a lot of tackles this game.
Well, they were on the field a lot. I mean, the leading tackler had five, but when you control the ball the way they did on offense, there just wasn't a lot of time for the defense to be out there. And let's face it, the Bears' offense with Matt Barkley at quarterback, you know, wasn't much of a threat. You know, they, in fact, I'm trying to think who was their running back even. I mean, I get, you know, it's they just didn't have a lot going on for them. I think their receivers are okay, but if you don't have a guy to throw it to them, yeah, the Bears are in a world of hurt right now. I think is the best way to put that.
They really, really are. And this week though will be different. I think Atlanta's offense is. I don't know how great they are, but I think they're certainly better than the Bears. They could be, you know, sort of in the same. I mean, have we played a great offense so far? Minnesota wouldn't necessarily be.
No, and Minnesota too. That was the first game they had with Sam Bradford, right?
Then Peterson got hurt that game. The Giants, you know, I suppose are respectable. People are excited about Dallas. Yeah.
Dallas has a good running game, and their quarterback, you know, was a solid game manager. But I don't think I was afraid of their offense necessarily. They're more of a ball control offense. Atlanta's more of a quick strike because they've got those receivers. And as much as I kind of, you know, think Matty Ice is overrated, yes, but he's still a competent, good NFL quarterback that can hurt you with the right weapons. So I think the defense is going to be very much challenged, especially if they don't get Randall and or Rollins back for the game coming up. I think they're going to have a hard go of it. And also they're playing on the road for the first time in a month, which isn't going to help either.
That's true. Yes. And they have a lot of road games coming up. I'm looking at the stats of, according to yards per game, who's the highest ranked offense. See, Minnesota is actually second to last.
Yeah.
Dallas is number three.
Okay.
Yeah. Number one is Atlanta.
Yep. Well, there you go. And Packer defense, where did they fall in the rankings, Dave? I haven't looked recently. I think they've got to be in the top third of the league, I would imagine, right?
Let's see. Based on you're making me do my internet searching on the fly, and it shows me nothing. So
okay, well, let's put it this way: the Packer defense is a notch above solid, I would say, but they're going to be challenged because of the injuries in the defensive backfield against Atlanta. There's no question about that. And also, if the game comes down to field goals, you know, I wasn't sure if I saw this. I thought Mason Crosby might have been burning one down on the sidelines when he pushed the extra point to the right. Now, granted, it was a 38-yard extra point. And then he comes right out and has the next kick blocked.
Yeah.
And you remember a couple of years ago when they were playing so well and Crosby was getting kicks blocked and he was missing kicks, but it wasn't a big deal because they were late in the game and they didn't really mean a lot. But it kind of signaled a spiraling down, and it wasn't until they threatened him with his job that he kind of got it back together, and the guy's been nails ever since. I hope this was a blip, but the last two times that saw the guy, you know, his eyes, were, of course, were glassy. I hope this isn't one of those things. He's going to get back into that kind of slump. Right now, they're going to need to score points any way that they can, and they can't really afford to, you know, have them leave even 4 points as they did in this past game on the field.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him yet. It's two in a row, but, you know, since the Bears, they always seem to find a way to block his field goals. I think they said of his so many that were blocked, four or five that were blocked, like three of them were from the Bears. I mean, it's something ridiculous. I'm not ready to like be worried about that yet. He's been very, very good the last couple of years, and you know, he got that holder. He scares me with and the punter.
Yeah,
you know,
the same guy, sadly.
Yep. I think that could be a game coming up late third quarter. You need a punt out of your end zone. And he punts it to, you know, he punts it 30 yards out of bounds. I feel like they should keep looking for a punter. I hope they're looking around for that because he is not he does not seem like the guy. But I finally found the defense. The Green Bay is ranked seventh with 314 yards per game on average. Atlanta is 24th. They give up 379 yards per game. And let's see how they do against San Diego. San Diego's pretty respectable defense or offense. So it's going to be probably, if we win, I think it'll be a high scoring game. If we lose, it could be where they light us up. this is a bad, rough game. In fact, I think it might be a little bit of a insight into the rest of the season here of what they have. If this offense is something new that they've discovered that they can be pretty successful with, hold the ball a lot, keep their offense off the field, we come out of a win in Atlanta, then things look pretty positive. Then we turn things around. If they get smoked, 38-17, or if they score in the 40s or something, and Julio Jones just goes off, that could be really ugly, ugly game we're gonna see.
Well, we're talking about the Atlanta game. Maybe we should do the betting lines because that gives us a chance to talk a little bit more about the Falcons and Packers at the Georgia Dome.
All right. Actually, can we do emails first, because I need to pull up Mike's Mike's spreadsheet.
All right.
That's one thing I didn't have ready.
You mean Mitno Miller, don't you?
Yes,
okay.
I do.
We know the one social media thing I want to highlight, and we did, Logan Robertson was in touch with us and Jason Johnson. But there was a picture that was tweeted to us, and it was the Packers Therapy Conclave happening at Twickenham Stadium today. And I see posted on Twitter is a picture of our team physician, Dr. Klaus, Packers Therapy racing correspondent Stephen Kilby, and his father Guy, and they're out front of Twickenham Stadium getting ready for the Giants and Rams game. There's a fourth Packer fan with them, and I gotta tell you, Dave, I don't know who he is. I don't recognize him, and I'm embarrassed, and I hope that Guy or Stephen or Klaus will remind us who the gent wearing the Aaron Rodgers jersey is with the black toque, like he's about to knock over a convenience store, probably in the neighborhood of Twickenham Stadium. So let us know. We apologize. I don't think that's John from Scotland, but he did attend the Packers Therapy Conclave and Convention at outside of Twickenham Stadium. I also noticed that Stephen in the picture, is he holding a Budweiser? I hope not. I mean, they have a lot better beer in the UK than that. So, good heavens, boy, do not drink that. Maybe it's an empty. Hopefully it's an empty and he's just putting in the recycling. Maybe that's what it is. Anyway, thank you, gents, for sending that photo. Glad you guys could get together. You found each other. And hope you had a great time at the game. So, Dave, what you got?
Okay. Let's go over the previous Go the Bears game, because we have a very, very special situation of our winners. So the first one we had, would Aaron Rodgers turn over the ball? You set the line at 0.5, and he did turn over the ball. He fumbled it into the end
touchdown,
zone for a
yeah.
touchdown. And what were you feeling at that point when that happened?
I'm glad you mentioned that, and we didn't talk about it earlier. But this is becoming a thing with him. And I've even heard, other players saying, like they say about Favre, he's going to give you, two or three chances every game. I'm wondering if this is Aaron Rodgers, once or twice a game, he's going to put the ball on the ground. It's happening more and more now. And I'm wondering why the heck that is when this is a guy who's got enormous hands, right? And he's been so secure with the ball. What is it all of a sudden about this fumbling, and especially, close to the end zone? I mean, what the hell is that about? It's a troubling turn.
Yeah. Well, the longer he holds the ball, and at least to that point, he's been holding the ball forever, and he dances around. He does a great job avoiding pressure and getting away from things.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
got a great move where he steps forward, people kind of collapse in, and then he bounces out first. That is excellent. It's almost Russell Wilson like. It's great, but the longer he does it, the more he holds the ball, and if he doesn't see someone, it's going to get knocked out. I mean, I can't imagine anyone holding onto the ball if a 300-pound man is coming and crushing you and swinging it out of there. So that's going to happen. The more that they can do quick passing, get it out of there, then we're going to see that happen less and less. So the answer was one, I said the under, and it was the over. Number two is actually pretty interesting. how many times will Ty Montgomery touch the ball? We kind of knew that was probably coming. You set the line at 7.5.
Ooh.
Looks like the answer is 19.
I think I missed that a little bit, yeah.
So the over, I took the over, which was correct. Number three, Brian Hoyer passing yards. You set the line at 265.
Yeah.
The unders, you know what? Go ahead.
Even if he doesn't break his arm, I don't think he gets there. I mean, he was only 4 of 11 for like 50 yards or something. He was not on his way to a great game. So my initial sense is to defend myself because the guy went out in the second quarter after Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, you know, put him out of the game. But I think I would have missed that anyway. I mean, the Packer defense, I think, was going to contain him.
Well, after the game against Dallas, we thought we were getting chewed up pretty good in the secondary. But under was correct. He had 49 before he went out. Barkley had 81 after that. So no matter how you slice it, they did
not
get to 265.
Right.
Number four was how many rushing yards allowed by the Packers. You said 98. I took the under. They gave up 69 yards. So
They bounced back. Yep. They
bounced back pretty good. Yep. How many sacks will Green Bay have against? I said Hoyer, but I guess any Packer or
any
Bear
any Chicago quarterback. Yes.
You set the line at 2.5. I took the over, and Mike is showing that there was one. Is that correct? There's only one sack.
Nick Perry had one. I know that.
It looks like there are two sacks. But maybe because I said of Brian Hoyer and not of Matt Barkley.
Okay. All right.
Well, but it's still under. You said 2.5. Even if you go with both, it's 2.
Oh, yes. It's still, yeah.
The
right.
Unders have it. Okay. Number six, how many rushing yards to Eddie Lacy?
Ooh.
What we decided to do was to scratch that one since he didn't play, which is an interesting for the results to keep in mind. So.
And he's not going to play for a while.
That is, we won't ask that this week. Number seven, do you think there will be any plays greater than 35 yards from scrimmage?
For the Packers.
Think I said, Mike has 30 here. I think I said 35. Either way, no, they did not. You said yes. I said no. Do you recall any play other than a pass interference going more than 30 yards? Which I don't
know,
by the way.
There was the run. Well, actually, that was the run by Montgomery was 30 yards.
That was you're correct. You're correct. But it was 30 yards. 35 yards was what I had put down.
Yeah, so, there was nothing over 35. I think the longest pass was 25, and the longest run was 30.
What was the pass interference?
That was 44 yards.
That was so, but we don't count that. So no. The answer is no. And then the tiebreaker was the total score, which is interesting.
36,
so I said,
yeah.
It was 36. I said 31. You said 38. So you win that one. So the winner this week is, because of the disqualification of that one over-under, was me.
Hey!
And Judy Freeman.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, this is going to be interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
So Dave and Judy sitting in a tree. KISSING. Well, that is. I don't think we've had cohabitation before at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. It is the home of debauchery, which is our new slogan for Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. Come bring the family for all kinds of debauchery. So Dave and Judy in the suite. So I guess I'll be talking to, friends and family about that one.
Yeah, that'll be – I hope Mr. Freeman, Tom Freeman, is not going to have a problem with that. He can come by and visit, but, we share it for the week. That's just the way it is. And I think there were others that got five right, but because of the tiebreaker total score, we were the closest of that tiebreaker group.
Wait a second. What? Are employees of Packers Therapy, Inc. eligible for, the week in the suite? Is that – do we allow that?
Well, we do if Judy's going to be in there. Yes.
Well.
If it was, someone else, Greg Smith or someone, I probably wouldn't.
If you were Gallant, you would give up your spot so that Tom could join Judy for a week of debauchery at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. Is that the Laughlin location, or are we doing this one at the Vegas location?
This is
I
the
forget.
Vegas. If I went,
Okay.
it's at the Vegas.
It's right there on the strip next to the Bellagio, I think,
I
right?
think
Yeah.
so. That's right. Right.
Okay,
Right.
good.
Right by
Excellent.
Caesars.
Excellent.
I'll tell you what, Judy and I, we'll meet there. We'll figure it out, and we'll contact you, Tom, once we've kind of sorted it all out. So, you ready to move on to this week?
All right. So if people want to play, Dave, how do they play the betting lines on Packers Therapy?
They play by emailing their answers to Mike Miller, whose email address is mitnomiller, mitnomiller at gmail.com. Email him and tell me responses, over, under, whatever else is the answers, and he will tabulate. Thank you very much, Mike, who has completed sending us 69 cents a week, but still is doing the spreadsheet correctly, which is excellent. So please send those to Mike and not to us.
If Mike went to MIT, because the Mitt of the No Miller, I'm just wondering about that. Does you know what? I don't know, but I'm going to say I'm going to go with the fact that Mike is a graduate of MIT, and that's why he's able to properly tabulate the results in the betting lines.
Well, yeah, you really need that degree, that high
Exactly.
level degree to figure it out. But I'm going to say it's not because it's MIT and then it's no after that. So he must be tired of people asking him, did he go to MIT? So
No,
no,
I
he said
don't
no.
know.
No.
Miller, no go. All
So.
right, then. So what are we doing for the betting lines this week?
All right, against the Falcons. Since he set a record last week, I'm interested which how many attempts do you think Aaron Rodgers will have this week, passing attempts, that is.
Yeah, they're going to be on the road, and it's going to be tougher in that environment to control the ball. So I don't think, I mean, I think they are going to pass as much as they can, because I don't see any kind of running back help on the horizon for them. But I'm going to put his attempts this week coming up, I'm going to put it at 48 and a half.
48.5. I'm taking the over. I think
All
this
right.
is the new Packers, 50 and up every game.
Okay.
Given the record-setting day that Devontae Adams had, how many catches do you think Devontae will have?
Well, if he would have gotten 14, would they have renamed the Hudson Center the Adams Center?
Oh gosh, I hope not.
I
He
would
does
think they
not
would have.
earn that yet.
Well, I mean, it's the all-time record was Don Hudson. I figured it's only right, But anyway, Devontae Adams with 13 catches. You remember the game that we saw with Dr. Klaus?
Yeah.
They targeted him 21 times, and he only had 7 catches. This time they targeted him, what, it was like 16, and he caught 13. So that is a step in the right direction. I think they're going to see some tape on him, or film, or whatever. They're going to download some information on him, and I'm not sure he's going to get quite that many this time around. So number of catches for him, I will put it at 8.5.
8.5. I'm taking the under on that one. I think Jordy's got to take some away from him. So I think it's going to be, 13 to 8.5 is still 4.5 to 5 catches, that Jordy should take away. But Jordy should be getting 10 plus, not Devontae. So let's see if that changes a bit in this game. Number three, your favorite, Matt Ryan. What do you think his quarterback rating will be?
Well, let's see. He'll be burning in hell. So, no. My problem with him is that you remember the game? It was, I think it might have been 2010, the year the Packers went to and won the Super Bowl. And as I recall, Packers did an onside kick, and Atlanta got it, and they quote moved the ball like 13 yards and got a field goal that won the game. It was
Yeah.
something like that.
Yeah, and that was regular season.
And people were like, oh my God, look at Matty Ice again coming up and moving the team. It's like he moved it like 13 yards. Ever since then, it's been annoying to me that they seem to give him more credit than he deserves. But he's probably a fine young man and a good Christian, so whatever. And so you asked me his quarterback rating?
Yes. You're like Skip Bayless and Aaron Rodgers, It's like
You know
something
what?
about him makes
That
you
is
upset.
exactly right, except I make about $4 million a year less than Skip Bayless.
That's a shame. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a damn shame. actually he's a pretty good quarterback. He's got a great receiving crew. He's playing at home. Packers secondary a little bit dinged up. So I'm going to put his passer rating. I think I'm going to put it right at 100.
All right, I'm taking the over. All right, I'm taking the over. I think it's going to be a rough day for the Packers secondary. Number four, how many receiving yards will Julio Jones have?
Oh, God.
Put that at 100 as well?
No, I think it's going to be higher. I'm going to put Julio Jones receiving at 135.
135. I'm taking the over on that. I'm going to stick with my theme that this is going to be a rough game.
Yeah.
One of the greatest memories for me as a Packer fan was Tyrone Williams. Not Tyrone Williams. I can I never remember his
Tremont name. Williams.
Tremont Williams, thank you. Maybe that's why I have such a hard time. Intercepting your Matty Ice right before halftime in the playoffs. It was that was a jump out of the chair moment for me.
Oh man, it was for me too. That really turned that game around. That was fantastic.
So
six.
How many interceptions will Tremont how many interceptions will Green Bay have against Matt Ryan?
Because
they're going to need them. I think they're going to need turnovers.
Yeah. I'll set the over-under at 0.5.
0.5. All right. I'm going to take – I'm going to take the over. I think they get one. They have to get one. They're going to have to get turnovers here for them to win this game, I believe. So another thing we didn't talk about, I was going to do how many Aaron Rodgers fumbles we're going to have, but that's a low number. But one thing we didn't talk about is if they're going to continue to do this offense they're having, I think the tight end needs to be involved somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Richard Rodgers caught one ball for 7 yards.
Right. He looks so good, though.
Well,
he slimmed down. He looks very good. And it's more important, Dave, to look good than it is to play good.
Is there any report on Jared Cook coming back anytime soon?
He has a high ankle sprain, and that's typically 6 weeks. And I think he's only probably about 3 weeks into that. And I've heard nothing, but I would be surprised if we see him before the middle of November.
Well, so how many catches by a Green Bay tight end will there be?
Did Perillo have any catches last week? No, so they had one catch this past week.
Right.
And do they have a third tight end on the roster? I don't know. They do. Cook is the third, but he's not going to play. So
right. You
only have two tight ends. Oh, boy. You want combined, right, between Perillo and
Rodgers.
And Rodgers, yeah. I guess I'm going to put the number at that at 2.5.
2.5? All right. I'm going to take the over. I think they get it. I think if it's over, it's going to be 3. It's not going to be many, I think he gets a few more. Number 7, Nile Davis. How many total yards will he have, not including kickoff or, I suppose, punt returns? But how
so
many
we're talking
yards?
Receiving and running the ball.
Correct.
Well, he's going to be a bigger part of the offense. I think that's a pretty much a lock. I don't think Don Jackson is going to play because I think his hand's broken, right? So I doubt that he's gonna play. So he's their only running back. I don't think James Starks is coming back anytime soon. So he's not a great runner. I think he's a lifetime 3.3 yard average. And I have no idea what kind of a receiver he is out of the backfield. I know he's good in space, as they say. So they'll probably try to get him the ball. Total yardage, he might get 30 on the ground. I'll put the number as total yardage at 55.
55 yards. I'm going to take the over on that. I think they got a week and a half now to try and get him more involved. I think old Buckethead's going to try to establish somewhat of a run. That's a real close one. That's a good line. I'm gonna go back. I'm going to say the under. I think Ty Montgomery still plays more than Nile Davis. So I'm going to go back on my original thinking. I'm going to take the under.
Okay.
I have a 7.5 just for fun. Will at some point in the broadcast, will they show the fact that Brett Favre was taken from the Packers, traded for a first-round pick, and that he came from Atlanta? So will they show Favre, talk about that trade? I was going to even say you have to show Favre an Atlanta uniform to make it count, but I think any kind of Favre reference graphic on the screen, you know, is that a yes or no? I say yes.
Boy, I say
Is that
no.
too long ago?
I don't. Yeah, I think it's too long ago. If there was, if it was, if he was in the house for some reason, I think they might do it. But I don't think he's going to be around. So I'm going to go no there.
All right. And then the tiebreaker I'm going to use instead of the total score is Julio Jones receiving yards. That's the tiebreaker, whoever gets the closest to that. And I'm going to say, you already said,
Did not reset the line at that?
you said 135. I did.
Right.
I did. So
Okay.
this is a tiebreaker situation. I'm going to say 155 yards.
Well, yeah,
So.
I think that's definitely possible. It was how many years ago was it? Maybe it was 2 years ago. The last time they played Atlanta, and Jones just, I mean, he killed him, as I recall. The
Yeah.
Packers still won that game. I remember they got off to a big lead, and they let him come back in the second half, and they just had absolutely no answer for him in the secondary. They even changed coverages, and they put oh gosh, guy's no longer with him now, and they did a little better on him. But yeah, he just it was a man among boys.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
yeah, so I think my 135 is probably conservative. So.
We shall see. So that's your Atlanta Falcons, Green Bay Packer betting lines.
All right. Well, if you want to play along with us in the betting lines with a very valuable prize, the week-long stay in the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino, you write to Mitno Miller, MitnoMiller at gmail.com. Let Mike know what your choices are, and he will enter them into a spreadsheet, and we'll tell you about it next week.
All right.
So, is it pop culture time?
It is.
All right. So, what you got, Dave?
Actually, I haven't been doing anything new. I've been traveling quite a bit. So I just caught up with Westworld. I'm on episode 3 or finished episode 3, and I really am enjoying it. I guess there was an original movie we might have talked about and how this is very different from that movie. I'm really enjoying that. Walking Dead starts tonight as a season premiere, which I think is something you don't watch, but I'm excited about that.
No.
I did watch one of the things I'm trying to kind of work through is some of the summer blockbusters that were really, really bad. Didn't make enough money. Got ranked pretty poorly from Rotten Tomatoes and everything. But for $5, I wouldn't mind seeing them on iTunes and just watching them. So I watched Independence Day. I forget two. I don't know. It was Armageddon or whatever it was.
I can't believe you, after seeing the first one, I can't believe anybody would watch the second one voluntarily. I think that's the kind of thing that they have the prisoners at Gitmo endures watching Independence Day. It's a terrible movie.
It is corny. The first movie is corny and cheesy. You know,
To
it's
say
kind
the
of,
least.
yeah, but it was fun. I mean, I think Will Smith was decent in it, and there's the point where the president gives the big address of today is the world's Independence Day on 4th of July. It's
Oh boy.
it's got a lot of memorable moments, and it's
Wretch.
cheesy,
Terrible.
cheesy fun. This is exactly the same. Even to the point where you know they're all about to die, but the dog is still out, and they go get the dog to and risk the lives of everyone. You know, to get they actually even do that again. Although I have to, you know, and it got poorly rated. I didn't think made much money at all. But if you sort of like the first one and can, in terms of a cheesy movie, just for fun, it delivered on that. So I can't say that I would ever recommend it. But I kind of enjoyed it because I always liked the first one is how cheesy it was. I mean, I am a TV show snob. I only watch stuff on Netflix and HBO. I don't like the common stuff that's on, you know, regular network TV. But this, for some reason, sort of gets to me. So I did watch it and I sort of had fun with it.
Well, I admire you for being honest and coming clean about that, because the first step in solving a problem is admitting that we have one. So congratulations to you on taking the first step, Dave.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And this comes from a man who just finished watching all 13 episodes of Luke Cage.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a great series. I found it to be enjoyable. I like Mike Coulter. He plays Luke Cage. He was also had an extended arc in The Good Wife. He's been in a couple of other things. The guy has got probably the best voice right now in I'm trying to think who may have a better voice. Liam Neeson, maybe. There are certain people that are good actors, but their voice just kind of makes them that much better. The show, if you like the Marvel universe, I mean, I watched Jessica Jones. I thought that was good, but it's not great TV. It's entertaining. I think at parts it drags a little at times, but it's worth watching. And I think what's most interesting about it is that I think we're seeing more and more shows that are trying to feature Black characters, African American characters, and make the show very centered on that particular experience, because so much of TV and popular culture really is, you know, from a majority standpoint. And this is not. I mean, it's set in Harlem, and they're, you know, kind of talking about a new Harlem Renaissance. It plays on some of the gang, you know, tropes and things like that. But Luke Cage is a Black superhero, and that's something that a lot of white culture, you know, Superman, Batman, those, you know, guys are white generally. So it's kind of an interesting take on it. I also happen to like the kind of music they use in the theme music. It's sort of you know, kind of that 70s funk type, you know, music. Some people would maybe compare it to blaxploitation films. Not, you know, necessarily a particular favorite of mine, but I'm not necessarily down on that kind of thing. I found it to be good. I would recommend people watch it, but if you're looking for, you know, some kind of premier television, peak TV kind of experience, not so much. You know, there are better shows out there if you're looking to be kind of fed, you know, spiritually or something like that. This is just, you know, entertaining superhero kind of TV, but maybe a notch up from what you might normally expect from superhero stuff. So I think it's a good, you know, investment of 13 hours of your time if you milk it out over a few weeks. I don't know that it's binge worthy. Like, I don't think I could sit down, you know, watch five of them in a row or something, because it is not necessarily a fast-paced show, but certainly a couple at a time, yeah, I think it's probably worth it. So, Luke Cage, you find it on Netflix.
You know, I watched Daredevil, not Jessica Jones, and I felt kind of the same thing that you're saying about this show. It's fine. There's some moments that was kind of cool. They had some good fight scenes, but there's nothing particularly clever about the show, or about, you know, there's a bad guy, there's a good guy, they come together eventually and they fight. But there's nothing particularly interesting. And I remember, it, like, by the third or fourth episode of both seasons of Daredevil, I was just kind of waiting for it to be over. But I didn't want to stop. I just, go. So I feel like what I've heard about all these shows is that they've made them into 13 show seasons, and they really should be like 8.
I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, so that makes it hard, because that's an extra 5 hours of show watching that, you know, you could put into something else. And there's so much stuff to watch, man. So I'm debating. I'd never watched Jessica Jones. I think I'd like Luke Cage maybe a little bit better based on what I heard. But if it's anything like Daredevil, I don't know if I want to start.
Well, Jessica Jones looks good in jeans, and there's crossover. Luke Cage, I think, is in half of that series, 6 or 7 episodes, so there's a little bit of a crossover. And my understanding is there's going to be a show next year called The Defenders, and it's going to be Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage all combining to fight crime in New York City. So,
maybe that'll be good, and it's worth catching up on.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm like I say, it's something to check out, but I wouldn't put it toward the top of your viewing list.
All right, fair enough.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, that's gonna wrap for Packers Therapy. Coming up just a week away, Packers leave home for the first time in a month. maybe more than a month. They head on the road. They go down to the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. They will play the Falcons. 3:25 Lambeau Field time is the kickoff. Packers and Falcons should be an interesting game because it will be a real benchmark as to where the Packers are right now in their evolution. To this point, I'm not sure we could make a lot of definitive statements based on the Chicago game. Now we're going to find out a lot more, I think, about who the Packers are and what they're going to be like going forward. So we'll be back. We will talk about it with you next week. But until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy. I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.